Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. Hello, Scott Marsh. How are you?
Doing great, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, but we have so much on the show today that we don't have time for us to even talk about it. But I'm going to briefly tell you, David McAsee, the club historian at Diablo Country Club and Carnoustie Golf Club, will be with us to talk about that. John Kennedy, he's the men's golf coach at San Jose State University. He played there, and now he's been the coach almost 20 years, so he has a long history there. Brad Barnett is the brand new Ping rep here in Northern California, and a friend. Brad used to be here in Sacramento with Titleist and moved up to the Northwest and is back as the new Ping rep. So we have a lot to talk about, a lot of good stuff here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And are you set to go?
I cannot wait. The best hour of the week right here.
All right. We will be back with more right after this on the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports, 1140.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. He's Scott Marsh. Scott, as I mentioned a little while ago, I attended a gathering of golf friends and associates at in San Jose last week, and had the pleasure to meet our next guest, and I thought he'd be fun to have on the show. Welcome, David McAsee. David is the club historian, not only at Diablo Country Club, but also at Carnoustie Golf Club in Carnoustie, Scotland. David, how are you today?
I'm great, and thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. You know, it's you had mentioned that that's the first time you had been in a room with that many folks that had known each other for so many years. And from your point of view, I'm thinking that you were meeting a lot of new people. But for many of us, it was just kind of, seeing old friends and renewing acquaintances and probably lying to each other a little bit as well.
All of that is in the game of golf, and it's always about the people.
Yes, it is. David, you, as I mentioned, you're the club historian at Diablo Country Club, and but the part that piqued my interest is the fact that you're a historian at Carnoustie Golf Club in Scotland, and we'll get into both of them. But I guess it begs the question: how does one become a historian? Do you study to become a historian, or did someone just say we need a historian? How about you? Or how's that work?
You know, I'm not sure there's a real path for anyone. I think every path is unique, but my path was one that was really more by accident. And the historian role found me more than I found it. I was like any club in Northern California that's a private equity club. The boards typically are volunteers. People step up to try to help the club through board service. I did that. And at the first annual meeting, there was a large controversy right in the audience while I'm up on stage with the new directors about who designed our golf course. And there were two camps on this, and both camps had a strong argument and both disagreed with each other emotionally. And and history should be something that unifies a club, not divides it. And I sat quietly thinking that can't be that hard of a question to answer. I was newly retired and I thought I would just quietly go about that. And so I was trying to solve a business problem. And make something that we could all unite around. I didn't care what the answer was. I just wanted it to be right.
Sure.
And so I went to a few libraries. I did a little bit of research, and I couldn't find the answer. The answer was really hard to find because it was meant to be a secret 100 years ago. But in the process, I discovered that our history, which hadn't been told in any depth in terms of golf here at Diablo, was a grand story. And my greatest surprise was that the Smith family of Carnoustie was built a cottage, and it became their adopted home in America for 30 years.
Wow.
And that's 100 yards behind me here in Diablo. And Diablo is a very sleepy place. It was created in 1872. The first clubhouse was built in 1881, and it wasn't for golf. It was for the associates and, captains of industry. And that's the clubhouse that is still the center of the club today. So it had a lot of history here. but it needed to have the golf history told well. So I thought I would do it. With the Smith family, I discovered that, of course, it's one of the grand families in golf. And so on a trip that my wife and I were taking in Scotland, I convinced her that I only needed 2 days to spend all the time I needed to finish this part of a book project that I was going to complete. And this book project I was going to deliver by 2014 for our centennial. Well, 2 days in Carnoustie turned into a lifelong application. And I joined the club. I tried to be as helpful as I could through the process, same as I did in Diablo. And turns out that told well, told accurately, and then told with an eye towards being a quality story, you can excite a lot of people with golf history. And you know, at Carnoustie, they were already fully targeted at golf. No club has a history like Carnoustie's. But here at Diablo, it became like something for us to rally around. And so at Carnoustie, again, just trying to be helpful, joined the club, tried to help in any way I could with replica trophies for the medals that were there. And what caught me, what changed my life, is that when I walked in the door, there were 43 medals behind a glass cabinet, locked with a small lock that had failed, so it had scotch tape over it.
Of course it was scotch.
Now it's Scotland, so everyone treated it with respect. Everyone treated it that way. But it turned into wallpaper over time, because when you walk past it for decades of your membership, to me, it was the most amazing collection I'd ever seen. And it turns out it's one of the top five on the planet. The difference is that the collection was gifted out of love by two of their PGA Hall of Fame members, two of the first 16 in the PGA Hall of Fame, Alex Smith and McDonald Smith, who just happened to come here to Diablo all the time to visit mom and dad. So as I got more helpful to the club, and they were approaching their 175th anniversary, I was asked to become historian, as I had done most of the research and could tell the stories in a way that would resonate on both sides of the Atlantic. And so I was kind of volunteered into the job by my club here at Diablo and the same at Carnoustie.
175 kind of makes the 100 years at Diablo seem pretty pale in comparison. 175 years, that's remarkable.
Yeah, and if I could add, it was one of the top, it's one of the earliest 10 clubs in Scotland, but it was the first one of its kind. The young people who were trying to play golf on this public land in Carnoustie, like a public land in St. Andrews, these are public parks. The first to play there couldn't walk in the front door of any other club. They were artisans, educated through 14, 4 years of apprenticeship onto a blacksmith trade or a cobbler or something else. So these folks were a band of brothers. This was the only club in Scotland they could walk in the front door. So they developed a true love for their club. It was the first artisan club in the world. And 175, now 182 years later, the club still prospers based on the members. And they had some of the best members that ever played golf or ever taught the game.
What an interesting circle, though, that the Smith family came over here to Diablo and completed that circle for you. You know, Scott, I'm always amazed when I think of, somebody 100 years ago deciding, well, this would be a good place for a golf course. First of all, the game wasn't certainly as popular. There weren't as many people. And to be able to find a spot and decide this is where it's going to be and then have the rest of the world grow up around them, I just find that fascinating.
It's pretty amazing. I made this comment before in a different episode, but I feel like, you know, we're Hugh Hauser here, just refining history. And David, you're probably the golf Hugh Hauser here in California for us. I'm curious, just with Carnoustie, just how easy was it able to join? Obviously, you had a historical background and you were doing something very unique there, and you mentioned it formed differently than some of the other clubs, but I'm just curious, how open is a course like Carnoustie to the public to join? It's certainly not like Augusta here, right?
Yeah, you have to reframe your idea of this when you look at Scotland golf. There are other white clubs, there are the Honorable Gentlemen, and then there is the St. Andrews Lynx and the Carnoustie Lynx. They are both governed like Harding Park here in San Francisco. They're community assets and they're community parks. St. Andrews on Sundays, there is no golf, right? You walk your dog down the fairways of St. Andrews. 1937, in a real controversial time, Carnoustie voted to allow Sunday golf. So Carnoustie has Sunday golf on their public park. So if you're a club, it's as if a club were sitting right outside the gates of Harding Park, mm-hmm. a place to gather. If you're a local, you can accrue or you can buy what they call a local ticket. There's a wait list. You have to go through a long time to be able to buy your local ticket. But if you are in that postal code, you can have access to the links. And there's three courses, all wonderful. The club itself is across the street. So the club itself is a place to gather with your mates, play the competitions. And you know, you're talking about playing for golf medals that were, you know, first gifted in 1842 and won by the Hall of Fame members. So it's a pretty high bar. Golf is king in Carnoustie. And many golfers that are scratched or better, one who's playing right now to a +8. So a former pro who's staying on as an amateur. But the golf is king. So then when you join, you're joining a club that's adjacent to a links. It doesn't allow you playing privileges. But if you're local, you do have the opportunity to have playing privileges. So you have your locker there. You'll get your bacon roll or your beverage before or after your round. And you're around some of the best people that you'll ever want to spend time with. So to join, you fill out an application. You have a couple of sponsors. It goes before the club council. And if approved, and most are, then you are invoiced your 195 Great British Pounds per year.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm just curious. I didn't get a chance to get down to Diablo. Is there any comparison in terms of how the course is laid out with Carnoustie? I know the geography is different and all of that. I'm just curious if there's anything about Diablo that you would go, boy, that's something that would remind me of Carnoustie.
Actually, it would remind you more of Claremont. It turns out the controversy was in our who designed us. It was Jack Neville. But Jack Neville was an amateur. He had just gotten into trouble with the USGA by trying to bring the Western amateur to Del Monte and provide free transportation for the amateurs. And the USGA said, don't you dare, not in a million years. And so at the same time, the PGA of America was forming, and the USGA was not treating those amateurs who supported the PGA formation. They weren't treating them well. And Jack supported the formation of the PGA. And then Jack designed the Diablo Golf Course. A lot like Tillinghast designing courses, Neville did not want to lose his amateur status, so they kept it a secret. So Neville basically brought what he learned from Claremont over here. And Neville, though, learned his golf from one of the boys, one of the Smith boys, George, the middle son, George. And then, of course, McDonald Smith came, and Jack and McDonald from 1908 were now at the Claremont Links, and they're both basically teenagers. And, you got the best professional in California and the best amateur in California, both playing match golf at Claremont. So when Jack came out here, he was well known to us. We were spawned out of Claremont. A third of our members, or a quarter to a third, were also Claremont members. And Jack was selected to design the course. So that's our elements, mostly Claremont kind of elements, which were designed by Alex Smith in 1904.
Wow.
What's the most interesting thing that you uncovered both at Diablo and at Carnoustie? And I guess the question is, did you ever find out you found out who designed Diablo. You just mentioned. Yeah. Okay. You solved that controversy. But what was the most interesting thing you uncovered?
Well, first, the collection is without peer. When you have 43 medals bequeathed by two PGA Hall of Fame golfers, and a lot of the golf that they won was pre-PGA formation, they did it for a purpose. And the purpose was to inspire young stirrings in golf to similar lofty levels of achievement. So they had a high purpose in bringing their medals back to their club. They wanted young people to have the same inspiration they had when they grew up in Carnoustie and had a chance to break out of what would have been a life of Alex Smith was a blacksmith apprentice. McDonald Smith was growing up in that same small village. And so golf provided that step up, and Carnoustie provided the basis that they were the best really in America. So in 1906, Alex Smith still had a problem. He had not won a U.S. Open. His brother had in 1899, but he had gotten second place three times, twice to Willie Anderson. So in 1906, as many people who know golf understand, the Haskell ball was dominating the sport. And that was B.F. Goodrich in Akron, Ohio. Well, at the same club in Akron, Ohio, are the Goodyear people. And they don't have a toehold in golf balls. But they do have technology that was different than most. They were the best when it came to pneumatic pressure. And they were beginning to produce tennis balls and, of course, tires with pneumatic pressure. And they designed a golf ball with pneumatic pressure. And they called it the Goodyear pneumatic golf ball. Now, the problem with this golf ball was that sometimes it would lose its air pressure. And as they said, if you had it in your pocket when it did, it would cause great excitement. It would make a large noise like an M80 going off, and then it would lose all its buoyancy. But if you hit this ball with real compression, and Alex Smith, they described him as having, you know, wrists like twisted steel wire and pistons for forearms. He could really hit a golf ball. He could crush it. And he used more of a cricket grip, what we call a baseball grip. So when he started using this ball in 1906, he could hit it 20% farther than a Haskell. And so this was revolutionizing his game. And he was going to Onwencia to play Willie Anderson, his dear friend, and the person who had already won 4 U.S. Opens by the age of 26. And Onwencia was his home course. So Alex went there. He had just won the Western Open with a pneumatic golf ball, self-pneumatic, and 1,200 pounds of air pressure inside this. So, I mean, it was an amazing golf ball. He won that U.S. Open. He was the first ever to break 300 across 72 holes in championship golf, in Open championship golf. He, when he won by 7 strokes. And number two, the second place finisher, was his brother, Willie, who played a Haskell. So the Smith family got first and second, but that wasn't enough. Alex Smith married a hometown girl, Jessie Maiden. Now, Jessie Maiden had a large family, and they all came to America through Alex Smith at Nassau Country Club to become golf pros. One of them was Jimmy Maiden. So Jimmy Maiden came, and he played the pneumatic golf ball, and he got third. So it was brother, brother, and brother-in-law taking first, second, and third at the U.S. Open.
Wow.
And that golf ball, actually sits at the USGA headquarters at Far Hills. It was gifted by Alex and the family to the USGA. They sell it one of their proud collection pieces. So this ball and that U.S. Open were a turning point for the Smith family and for golf. You know, Goodyear finally had a way to compete against B.F. Goodrich, that their fierce competitor. And the golf ball lasted a long time, about 12 months, because Alec Campbell, in 1907, was playing in the U.S. Open and was amongst the leaders. Alex Smith went to Great Britain to try to win the Open Championship, so he wasn't defending his title in 1907 for the U.S. Open. They were over the same time frame. So Alec Campbell had one of these explode when he took a tee shot. And in those days, you had to finish the largest part of the ball into the hole. Well, the ball didn't break up, but it lost all of its buoyancy. So he took a triple. It's a three over what they call bogey at the time. He saw 3 strokes over what he normally would have scored, and he lost that U.S. Open by 2 strokes.
Oh, my God.
So the self-pneumatic was good for everyone except for playing professionals who just couldn't risk it. So it ended up dying a slow death over the next half a dozen years. But for in 1906, the self-pneumatic was king.
I had never, ever heard about the self-pneumatic ball. So I have learned something today on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. You know, David, we could go on and on. I imagine you have lots more stories. So I think we'll just have to get you back because time is of the essence here on the radio show. So what I would say is thank you so much for spending some time with us. David McAsee, the club historian at Diablo Country Club and Carnoustie Club in Scotland. And we'll just have to have you back and have some more stories.
I would love that. Great to see you.
Thank you so much. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back in. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. As I've mentioned a couple of times on this show, I went to the gathering of golf at Cinnabar Hills and just ran into a lot of old friends and John Kennedy and I had a chance to talk a little bit. John is the men's golf coach at San Jose State University, and I thought John ought to be on the show. So how about that? Here he is. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you, Frank. I appreciate it a great deal.
Absolutely. You know, we first of all, that was a great day, I thought, you know, to be able to be around all of those folks that some we knew and some were folks we met, but to renew old acquaintances and have your buddy, you know, all the alums there as well, and Roger Maltby and so on and so forth. It was a great day, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it brings us all together in a, you know, non-competitive situation. You get to break bread with some friends and you know, Mitch Jurisich and John Shiro, and I think Emmy's getting a little bit more, Emmy Moore, yep. Minister getting a little bit more involved, you know, it's we didn't know we needed it until it happened, and now you know, now it's quite clear we need to get the band together every now and then. So
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
You have quite a history at San Jose State, having played on the golf team there so many years ago, and you've been the head golf coach, the men's golf coach, for almost 20 years. And how have things changed over the course of the time?
Okay, where do we want to start? Things have changed dramatically, and yet they're the same.
Right.
You know, we're constantly striving to get better at everything, and from our play, from our it's still crazy, this game and golf, and getting the kids up and running and getting them into making good decisions and seeing some lights turn on here and there. It's a beautiful thing, and San Jose State's been absolutely amazing at providing those opportunities.
John, as someone that played there so many years ago and now has been the golf coach for so long, it's gotta feel pretty good you know, that you've spent so much of your life there. What does it mean to you to have been involved so long?
You know, I fell in love with this place in 1985, I'm surprised they pay me to come here. I love what I do, and I've just been, it's all been San Jose State that's given me basically everything, what it means to me, it means everything. You know, I love State. I started coaching at Santa Clara University, and that's a truly amazing university. And but when San Jose State called and asked me to come home, I was truly honored. And this is an amazing university for everything that it does for the community and for the game of golf. You know, our history in the game and honoring that legacy is something that I take very seriously, and keeping our legacy going forward through these crazy times in athletics. I mean, there's going to be a lot of change coming up here in the next few years. So being able to help kind of guarantee, or I can't say guarantee, but at least guide our golf program and maybe assist our athletic department through these different times, it's truly an honor, and it's something that I take great pride in and work hard at.
For the uninitiated, one would think, well, the golf coach, so you know, when during golf season he's out there helping the kids play golf, and after the golf season, who knows what he does. But there's a whole lot more involved in being the men's golf coach at San Jose State. So give me kind of the Reader's Digest version of you know, what your duties entail.
Well, let's see, where shall we begin? I mean, it's... I wear a lot of different hats, even though this hat stays the same, even from the time I played here, I wore this hat, but in actuality, I wear many different hats, and from a coaching standpoint, coaching the boys up and helping them to their peak. And as our friend Ken Venturi used to remind me, he goes, they don't have to be the best, John. They just need to get better than they ever thought they could.
I love it.
And that has always stuck with me. And so I've got the largest roster I've ever had with 12 young men on the team. And sometimes it's like herding cats, but helping them along their path and helping them make good decisions and quality actions, that's a fair amount of my time. Finding those young men and recruiting, that takes time. I've got guys currently on my team. We have a young man from France. We have a young man from the Philippines. We have one from Canada. We have one from Malaysia by way of Dubai. We have quite a few Californians, but we're trying to find the right mix and yet the kind of young man that's really committed to being the very best that they could be. That takes a fair amount of time, and it's a unique sport to recruit in. It's not you can't go necessarily down to the local high school and find it. It's you've got to be somewhat creative in that regard, so that takes up a fair amount of time. And then you've got fundraising.
Yeah. Right?
We operate at a pretty high level, which takes a fair amount of money and support from the community, being involved with the community, and servicing the community, not only myself, but having my team service the community and help the game along. That's quite a bit of time. One of the joys of our program is the Western Intercollegiate, and producing that along with the Golf Channel and Positiempo. We're right in the middle of not quite in the middle. We're coming up. I think we got 7 years left on a 10-year contract with the Golf Channel, in which we'll be televising live college golf from Santa Cruz for the next 7 years at least.
How good is that?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's quite a production, Frank. Sure. I got to tell you, it's there's quite a bit that goes into that, and so directing that and getting all the pieces to work together, that's another part of the job. And
you're staying busy is what you're trying to tell me.
I am the past president of the Golf Coaches Association of America, so that's been a labor of love with representing and working for all the coaches. I just joined the NCAA Golf Committee. We've got a little bit of a pickle with the scoring system in golf right now, and we're trying to get through that. So I'm on a committee that hopefully will navigate that issue and put college golf back on the forefront of technology. So I keep myself busy. It keeps me out of trouble. It keeps me out of trouble, but it doesn't lend itself to playing much golf, and that's what everybody thinks. Everybody thinks I go out and play golf. I played one time this year, and that was with my son for the first time down at Pacific Grove Muni. I took him down and showed him the old stomping grounds. But that's a little bit of the slice the what I do.
We're talking to John Kennedy. He's the men's golf coach at San Jose State. John, you mentioned Ken Venturi, who's a mutual friend and of both of us. And when you think about the people that have played there over the years, he probably jumps out as the most famous. But you've had some pretty interesting alum that played golf there.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, right? we take a great deal of pride in the character, you know, as we have characters with character. that's part of the game, right? I mean, you can't be normal and stand out at the same time. So
how true is that?
Right. So we've had some amazing alums and some amazing golf come out of here. If I start going into names, I'm going to forget somebody. So, and that was one of the things Kenny told me. He said, don't start naming names, man. You'll forget somebody. Don't do it. but the list goes on. You can see a few of our All-American plaques. And we've been very blessed. Our practice facility now here on campus that our donors made possible and the university made possible is going to add to that immensely. We've got 18 acres right downtown San Jose.
Wow.
Of the purest grass you'll ever find.
That's great.
So a lot of great players are congregating there, and our teams are making full use of it, and the community is making good use of it. It's the future is bright in that regard.
Having Ken Venturi as an alum and a friend over the years has meant a lot, not only to your program, but to you personally. When you think about your time with Ken, what comes to mind?
He made me grow up fast. he really was remarkable and an incredible mentor and friend to me. He was a little short on praise unless I really, really earned it. He got me to earn it, you know, I can't begin to completely cover what he meant to me or what he's given to me as a mentor and as a friend. I miss him dearly. But his old school type approach is something that I love, and it was honor, integrity, give back, and fight like hell. I was enamored with him when I first met him, and then he took me under his wing, and I was very blessed. I could never spend enough time with him.
Very fortunate indeed. John Kennedy, the men's golf coach, San Jose State University. John, appreciate you spending some time with us. We'll check back in as the season progresses and see how you guys are doing, and maybe come see you at the Western International in Santa Cruz as well.
Well, we'd love to have you. That would be absolutely fantastic.
All right. It's a date. Look forward to seeing you. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa, Scott Marsh beside, and my buddy Brad Barnett. He's a guy I met 20 plus years ago when he was in Sacramento as a Titleist rep, and Brad moved up to the Seattle area and got rained on a lot. And I guess he decided he wanted to come back because Brad is now the new Ping Golf representative for Northern California. So, Brad, welcome back and welcome to the show.
Super great to be back, and I'm happy to be here with you both.
You know, you, as I mentioned, you spent about 15 years up in the Northwest after leaving here. So we kind of talked about the fact that that you've moved around a lot in your career. You know, born in the Midwest and school there, and San Diego and the Northwest. How close is Sacramento to home for you?
You know, I've lived in some great places, like I said, really from border to border on the West Coast. Obviously, each place kind of has its own unique vibe, flavor. It's hard to beat the beauty of the Northwest, especially in the summer months. I'm not going to speak to the winter months a ton, but especially in the summer months, San Diego, especially as a 20-something year old, was a blast. I had a great time, but and I truly mean this, because when I would come back to visit friends down here, I always said, for whatever reason, maybe it's some of my Midwest, upbringing and so forth. I always loved Sacramento. To me, always had the best soul of any of the places I'd lived up and down the West Coast. People were more rooted in my opinion, warm, friendly, had a little bit of everything here. And I always loved the soul of the city. So when this opportunity came up, it was, I jumped on it pretty quick.
It was interesting. We were talking, you right out of college, you had an opportunity to work for Ping, and through one thing or another, it didn't happen then. And here you are all these years later, working for a family-owned golf company. I mean, that's remarkable when you think about the fact that one of the most successful companies in the world is basically family-driven. And I know that means a lot to you. And as the newest employee in the Ping Golf realm, how do you see yourself moving forward from here? What are you excited about?
Well, I'll say this. For me, it's this move is certainly full circle. I played when I played college golf, we were a Ping sponsored school. I had really one or two companies on my list, and Ping was that the first one, and it was the first one I interviewed with. As it turned out, I still had a little school to finish. When you're playing college golf, you can't really go study abroad and say, I'm going to stop playing college golf for a while. So right. I had to wait to after I graduated, and that little study abroad, window there was the one that really prohibited me from accepting that job right there on the spot out of college. So, that opportunity passed for whatever reason. Obviously I went elsewhere and so forth, but always kind of in the back of my mind, kind of hoped and kind of prayed that I'd have another opportunity. And Ping's one that, like you said, it's family run, it's family driven. They do so many things the right way, and they're very organic in their hiring practices, which is super healthy. So again, being an outsider at my age and my stage in my career, having an opportunity to come back to Ping I was just elated, and I was really blindsided. I was just overjoyed with the opportunity to join the company.
You know, when you think about golf equipment today, I mean, everybody really produces quality golf equipment. It's pretty hard to argue across the board, but there's just something special about the way that Ping Golf approaches. And again, you know, from the family point of view, I mean, you talk to employees down there, you meet employees down there in Phoenix, and everybody feels like it's part of a family. This is probably something that goes back to the days of Carson Solheim and how he started the business in his garage, basically. But there's just, in my mind, something special about the equipment that comes out of Ping. They don't come out with new equipment every year just because it's a new year and they ought to have something new. They come out with something when they've got something better than what they did before. And you know, from a from a sales rep point of view, that's got to be something, you know, some real solid ground for you to stand on as you move forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'll attack that from two different ways. You know, I think the kind of the mantra is to, you know, to build it right, to fit it right, and to sell it to the right person. And like you said, it's not like we're going to launch something just because we're on a cadence that we need to launch something because of precedent before, right? It's done so when there is a noticeable advantage to the player. And we won't launch something until we're confident that it's functionally better than what came before it. Speaking to the family atmosphere again, it is so glaring. And again, now that I've had perspective of other companies and I've traveled a little bit, you know, in my career, kind of in and out of places and so forth, these things kind of jump off the wall at you. And what I mean is when I was interviewing and so forth, you know, every department very, very visibly will have like a tenure board of employees that have been there 20, 30, 40 plus years. And you just don't see that anymore. And every department had that. When questions were turned to me as what kind of questions do I have for this manager, this manager, this manager, you know, the low hanging fruit one was, what are you guys doing right to keep people here this long? Because it's incredible. It's incredible, but absolutely family atmosphere. Obviously engineering at its peak, right? I mean, it's an engineering focused brand. Everything we do is about engineering and making products that benefit the golfer.
You know, when you say benefit the golfer, I know Scott, like me, plays ping as well. And when we stand over the ball and kind of you know, hit it where it's supposed to go, maybe a few times, we don't really think about all that background, all of the effort that goes into the design and the manufacture of all of that. So Scott, the next time you stand over a tee shot, I want you to think about that.
That's probably what I should be thinking about, because normally I'm thinking about it's going to slice into the trees, and then, you know, that comes true. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So probably a better thought process in the back screen there, Brad. But in terms of the engineering, you know, because ping is so state-of-the-art on that, but is it fair to say, because Frank's right, there's so many companies that are making great golf equipment. We all know that. But if there's something that maybe differentiates ping from some of the others, it's the fact that every time they're engineering something, they're thinking about how it can benefit the most golfers possible. Because the people who play ping, who I know and love the equipment so much, just love the fact that, for lack of a better word, it's the most forgiving set of irons, and it's got the golfer who's just trying to have a good experience, it gives them the best chance to go out there and do that.
Yeah, from the early days of the brand, everything was about making this game more approachable to the widest variety of players, right? Everybody from Victor Hovland to somebody just entering the game, to even youth with our Prodigy line. The idea is to make this game as approachable and as enjoyable as possible. So I think we as a brand do a phenomenal job of really targeting each of those segments, because it's, as we all know, there are a million different player types at equally or more so different stages within their growth within the game from a skill standpoint. And we have products. I think we do a really, really good job of addressing and offering products for each of those player types.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, you've got a lot of PGA players playing ping too. So
yeah,
it's hard to just put it into one overall bucket like that. But I do think that is kind of the consensus. And that's, I think, when most people think of Ping, that's kind of the thing that comes to them, and it resonates, which is such, I think, a great thing. I'm curious, where did you play college golf?
I'm a Jayhawk. I was given I drank out of the Kool-Aid early from my father, who was also a Jayhawk. My sister followed suit, but obviously I was initially indoctrinated within basketball, sent back to the basketball camps, which in those days was Larry Brown. But at 5'9", 5'10", on a really good day, I'm not going to make much of a dent with that sport. And luckily golf found me, and I was able to go back there and play on a pretty competitive golf team. I had some really good teammates, Dan Rooney, who started the Folds of Honor, which is obviously very much tied into golf, is a teammate of mine. Gary Woodland was right behind me. And so we had some pretty, and Matt Gogel was there also as well, my freshman for 2 years. So had some pretty neat and notable teammates along the way there.
Yeah, Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
Rock Chalk.
You know, Brad, I have to say that I appreciate the fact that when you were describing the breadth of users of Ping equipment, and you mentioned Victor Hovland, that you didn't put me on the other end of that spectrum. Thank you for letting me be in the middle somewhere.
much on the upper half there, Frank. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brad, we just have a minute left here. What do you hope to do in Northern California? You know, when someone comes up and talks to you about Ping, you know, what are you going to tell them, and what are you prepared to do to help them learn that the brand is the best for them?
Yeah, I think one thing that makes Ping a little different is, even as a sales rep, and sales is obviously part of my job title, but I'm almost pushed, you know, if there's a directive from the company, is it's a little bit different in that my job is to really represent the Ping brand, the family, and all the employees of Ping to the best of my ability here. If we happen to sell some golf clubs along the way and make people's day a little bit brighter in doing so, job well accomplished. I've had a lot of people that were old contacts here, and it's great to kind of reestablish those contacts, but I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of new faces along the way. But we have just such a wonderful, wonderful product with amazing people behind it. And I hope that I can wave that banner here in Northern California.
Sounds like the perfect match to me, Ping Golf and Brad Barnett. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We will look to have you back on the show as you progress in the job, and we'll find out what's new with Ping coming up in the next go round.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Brad.
This wraps up another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sactown Sports 1140. Stay with us every week. Right now, during basketball season, it's tough to find us, but we'll always be available on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Keep playing the game. Keep it in the fairway. Have some fun. It is a game.